Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Give it to me. Give it to me.
Hey, I'm Molly Wood.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
Welcome to It's a Thing, the weekly podcast supported by you, where you can tell your neighbor something about the local and world things unless they too takes a subscription.
What?
Thanks for joining us. I thought it was just the wine talking, but then I realized I was reading the words.
No, that is from the
precisely as written
Coshocton Tribune, circa 1920.
I am dying now. Where does he find this stuff?
You could tell your neighbor something about the local and world things unless they too takes a subscription.
Unless they too takes a subscription. Because it sounds like it might be Canada-ish. And I'm just perhaps unfairly assuming the possibility of Canada from the ad or news item entitled The Moose Defenders. Halloween mask dance.
Coshocton, Ohio.
At the Moose Temple. Oh, it's Ohio, of course. And also, yeah. I think they just probably mean like the, nope, not the same
Moose
thing.
Lodge?
Yes, the Moose Lodge. Thank you. Except it's a temple. Wow. This is, that's good. That's a good Ohio. You know, it's good because it encompasses so many things. One, that producer Rich lives there and is, I think we can all agree, a pretty big homer. But two, or B, it encompasses the thingness that is everybody hating Ohio.
Aww.
And Ohio taking over.
And Ohio just being like, too bad if you hate us.
Unless they too takes the subscription. It's amazing.
Unless they too takes the subscription. Once I saw 1920, by the way, that just collapsed into, oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I get right. It like, all right, sure. Yeah. They just did what they wanted. They just said what they felt like saying.
I would like to identify a thing that certainly isn't new. Been on the rise for a long time, but I feel like it's cresting. It's one of those things that's cresting. Macarons. The little pretty cookie sandwiches.
Where did that come from?
Because rainbow colors.
Totally.
Everywhere. Everybody has them. And
everybody has them.
Every hotel gives them to you now when you check in for some reason.
Really?
I have had three hotels in three different cities all give me a complimentary macaron.
Wow.
Yeah, as a sort of a like, welcome, thank you for staying with us.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I cannot even, at least that's like a specific good thing to pinpoint it to. But I have seen them everywhere. And in fact, when I did my customary deep, deep research that I do for the show, which is while we're talking, pop it into DuckDuckGo and hit news. Mm-hmm. These viral macaron and pocky stick flowers are swoon-worthy, says Yahoo.
Swoon-worthy are they.
Uh-huh. And then there's just a million recipes that are new of macarons. And evidently, there's a hotel in Paris where the pink velvet chairs are shaped like macarons.
I mean, I would assume Paris macarons. Like, that's the home of what's the fancy macaron place from Paris that everybody has to go to and buy macarons and take them back to their friends afterwards. It's called.
I went there.
It's called Le Macaron Place.
Le Macaron Place, definitely. That's what it's for sure called.
Macaron.
We're just stalling so that you can look this up. Discord, help us out here.
Anyway, I'm not too shocked to find them in France. It's when they've moved out of France. I have seen them on two continents.
Yeah,
I am going to a third continent. In 2 weeks, I will tell you whether macarons then are worldwide or not.
Okay. Which one?
Europe.
Oh, fun. Mm-hmm. They're everywhere. I mean,
is Europe
right
really
now?
A continent, though? Let's be fair. It's kind of just a peninsula, but.
Tom with the, like, isthmus instigator behavior.
Zoe brings bacon in the UK. Europe is overrated.
Europe is overrated. Is it? I mean, just really. Did you see me just stunned and decide? Is it even really a continent? Just saying.
I'm surprised that hasn't gotten, I've seen people say that, but I'm surprised that hasn't gotten more like internet juice behind it somehow.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. You know, people aren't that good at geography, turns out. Tell you what they are into. As we did, this is a bit of a follow-on thing that I have this week, a follow-on to our conversation yesterday about spooky season.
Yes.
And how we have capitalismed the bejesus out of Halloween.
As we do.
And now it even has a color scheme.
Oh, of course. It needs one.
That I am starting to see everywhere in the form of erstwhile holiday lights. Mm. I'm just going to call them Christmas lights, actually, because like Christmas lights were a Christmas light thing.
Yeah.
Now you get what used to be Christmas lights in Halloween colors, and those colors are purple and orange.
Now, Halloween's traditional colors, the reason for the season, if you will. Mm-hmm. Black and orange.
Yeah.
Is it because black doesn't make a very good light? I'll admit that it's purple and orange for the lights.
Maybe. That might be. Yeah. They're Halloween, black and orange, according to this Today, as in the TV show article that I found from just this, roughly this time last year when everybody was like, what's the deal with the freaking people, purple and orange? Orange and black, obviously the traditional colors, because those were associated with the fall harvest. Mm-hmm. Purple and green have crept into the Halloween palette, possibly because of witches and their green skin, green, like in the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, okay.
But now they have determined that, yes, for some reason, and maybe it's like because the witches' capes would have some purple in them, or sure, it's like a royal thing. I don't know, whatever.
Purple,
but
could be a spooky color. I get that.
Yeah, but orange and purple, uh-huh, are the Halloween that, like, definitively and unquestioningly, I'm sorry, purple and orange are the Halloween colors of the season, as evidenced by the fact that when I was driving around last night, I saw like 8 different houses festooned in lights, like full on Christmas light decorating, you know, up on a ladder, kind of drape your whole entire house,
mm-hmm,
in orange and purple lights.
There's a very Halloween centric heavy house near in my neighborhood, and I didn't think about it till you just said this. Purple and orange Halloween lights for sure.
Along, yeah, with, I mean,
like,
it's really
12 10-foot skeletons. Not even joking. Like,
oh yeah, if you recall this time last year, that's, yeah, when we identified that huge, uh-huh, skeleton. We don't worry, we've already been on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, purple and orange lights. Purple, I mean, it's just lights. It's like amazing how we've just basically said we're going to take all the same stuff that we used to do just around Christmas. And the reason I keep saying Christmas is because it was really only in recent years even that like Hanukkah lights became a thing. I mean, you, yeah, would be able to have, like, I've done blue and white trees many years in a row because my son is Jewish and we have Chrismukka. And so you can definitely get, and people would do blue and white lights for like a kind of a more pagan, you know, just winter, mm-hmm, type tree look, or move it over for Hanukkah. But that specific decorating thing, I mean, now there are Halloween trees. It's like everybody took what they used to do for Christmas, migrated it onto Thanksgiving, grafted it onto Hanukkah, and now it's just being applied to Halloween, and the colors have been set, and now, they are purple and orange.
In the inevitable tendency of humans to take things too far, which holiday is next?
I know. I mean, I'm starting to wonder, is it like, right, Valentine's Day trees?
Could it be? It's the thing with Halloween was it was a little bit of a like, ugh, Christmas, so played, so mainstream. Halloween, man, it's goth. It's, you know, it's controversial. That's what made Halloween's bones.
Get it? Edgy. Ayo.
So, yeah, what's the next holiday that has that of like, it's the cool holiday?
Because
Valentine's Day, it's still got a lot of backlash, but it could, right, it could be brought back around with Galentine's Day, perhaps. You know,
that, I mean, it sort of has been.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
Think you could really,
that could be its
that
way
that
back into celebration.
Is the saving grace? Yeah. I am realizing as we discuss this that you know which one apparently it's never going to be is poor Thanksgiving.
No, Thanksgiving.
Like, no
is
one
just,
cares.
Yeah, Thanksgiving. Everyone kind of relaxes at Thanksgiving. They're like, We turkey, we hate each other's political beliefs, and we watch football. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't want, we don't, it's too close to Christmas.
And you
to
maybe
mess with,
do some, like, some pumpkins and some.
Yeah, but I also just did pumpkins for Thanksgiving, so it's not even that special when I do them at Thanksgiving. So
yeah, it's really like it's tell you what it's not going to be is Thanksgiving. I mean, 4th of July has a collection of devotees, like the people who like I think of 4th of July decorating. God, I'm just going to get in so much trouble here because I had 1/4 of a glass of wine, but I think of 4th of July decorating as having heavy overlap with the Live, Laugh, Love crowd.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. And like it's got a
aesthetic is similar.
If you're coming from the right and you want to do the patriotism thing and you cross into Live, Laugh, Love territory, that's a recipe right there.
Yeah. It's 4th of July is really, it's the aesthetic is similar.
That's a good candidate. I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, get your light, get your purple and orange Halloween lights. You still have time. That's why I brought it up with plenty of time for you to shop.
Feedback at itsathing.me too if you got thoughts on any of this. My other thing is kids these days say there's too much sex on screen.
What?
So we
are babies.
We've talked about the fact that there's like sex is on the decline, you know, dating amongst younger people maybe on the decline. There is a UCLA department that did a study of 1,500 10 to 24-year-olds. And before you get too bent out of shape, they only asked the romance and sex questions to the 13 and older. They did not ask the 10 to 13-year-olds. But 13 to 24, they asked questions about, like, do you like romances? Do you think there's too much sex on TV? And, turns out 52% of the 13 to 24-year-olds surveyed said they'd really just like to see more friendships and platonic relationships on TV and movies, please.
Oh, the kids are all right. And you know that this is major because they quoted Olivia Rodrigo in this article in Variety.com. Like, if you want to cement this.
They borrow quoted it. They quoted Olivia Rodrigo being quoted in the study, being quoted by NME. On whether she had seen Euphoria.
And she was like, ugh, I don't want to.
I don't have the desire to. I remember walking out of Barbie and being like, wow, it's so long since I've seen a movie that is female-centered in a way that isn't sexual or about her pain or being traumatized. It's a bad idea, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't hear a 17-year-old black male from Georgia said, I don't like that every time a male and female character are together on screen, studios feel the need to make them fall in love. There's a complete lack of platonic relationships in American cinema. And love this one. A 23-year-old Asian female from New York spoke up on another relationship stereotype. The guy would be a jerk to the woman, but she would end up falling in love with him. These kids are all right. These kids get it.
I think I've been trying to figure out. I think maybe what's going on here. Well, I like what the founder and director of the department that did the study, Yalda T. Ulls, said. While it's true that adolescents want less sex on TV and in movies, what the survey is really saying is they want more and different kinds of relationships reflected in the media.
Yes.
And I think I would build on that and say it feels to me like what they actually want is authenticity. There is youth of any age always wants more of the media to reflect what they see. And this is what they're saying is our real lives are full of lots of relationships that have nothing to do with love and sex. So please show that.
Yep.
And I feel like the reason there's so much love and sex on TV is because there used to be none. You go back into the 20s, the 30s.
There was like longing.
They cracked down and were like, don't you show that love and sex on screen. You know?
My son was just talking about this. He's in a film history class and there was effectively like a law, like there was like a federal ban and they would change the endings of movies. There was something where, you know, a woman had just ended up single or run away from her marriage or something. And they like made them recut it in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, I think not to sound like an old lady / Gen Z, but there is a lot of sex out there. Interestingly, like they're like, when I think about what the music that we used to listen to, I mean, it was sexist and, you know, it was sort of sex adjacent or whatever, but it's like pretty explicit now.
I feel like the tap got turned all the way open because starting in the 50s is when you're like, wait a minute, he's shaking his hips a little bit too much, that Elvis, exactly. Right? And the whole 60s revolution was about sexual liberation, and it was tied into feminism of like, you're trying to keep sex off TV and movies because you're trying to keep people from having sex, because you're trying to keep people down. And I think younger people don't understand how big of a deal that was, because they've grown up in a world where the grown-ups have grown up in a world where it's always been getting more permissive. Mm-hmm. Whereas my parents grew up in a world where it was much less permissive and loosening up. And they were actually pushing against, like, maybe we're loosening it up too much. And for the longest time, it was like, no, we need to loosen up more. And I think we've now loosened up all the way. And that's why the kids are like, maybe too loose? I don't know. Like, it's looking like, yeah.
Can we just reel it in a little bit? Like, it's a little much.
I also think there's something that's just different about, you know, the way relationships are formed, because you're free to have more kinds of relationships. And so you realize that there are more than I think previous generations may have.
Yeah. I think there could be something to that. I like it. Either way, I like that that's a very evolved way of looking at things, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it was evolved back in the day to be like, it would be okay to be sex positive and show sex on TV. Like, it's not taboo. But the idea that they're just like, hey, can you show more varied, authentic relationships is really quite charming.
Yeah. My grandpa, who was born in like 1908, would agree with the Gen Z people. There's too much sex on TV.
There is too much. I know. I like it. Also, it's a lovely crossover.
Yeah.
Situation. No,
it's very interesting.
Yeah. Fascinating. Less fascinating, but still delightful, is my last thing for today. Gnocchi.
Oh, good one. Yes. Tell me more. And make me some, because it's delicious.
Oh, it's so good. For a while, actually, I found a gnocchi recipe on the New York Times cooking app, of course, sub thing, and couldn't even find gnocchi in the store. Couldn't get it, which I assume and attribute to the fact that it, for whatever reason, is just a super duper thing now.
Yeah. It's so, like, in demand that they run out of stock.
Yeah.
Huh.
Apparently, there's a lady in Seattle who has become famous on Instagram for making croissant-shaped gnocchi.
Oh, little mini croissants.
And all these different colors.
Little mini croissants.
Little mini croissants. And so she makes all these, like, bonkers croissant-shaped gnocchi, and she was making, like, Ukrainian flag ravioli and all these other things. But now, no surprise, the thing that's really blown her up is gnocchi. Lifehacker, as of just a couple days ago, has a piece called Why Not Shape Your Gnocchi into Wee Pumpkins?
Oh, my God.
Wee pumpkins, which do that, except for one thing, which is like, it is unmakeable.
I don't know.
Much like, how, ironically, much like macarons.
Yeah.
Which are incredibly hard to make. I'm sorry. I am a good cook, and homemade gnocchi is very hard to make.
They show them using bits of string on the unboiled gnocchi to make the pumpkin lines.
It's so cute.
I would never be able to make that work.
It's beyond adorable.
That's amazing.
And now I want to try it. I want to make wee pumpkin gnocchi.
And then fill them with pumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Freaking delicious. And yeah, I mean, I wish I could explain further than that. Like, I don't know if it's gnocchi just pasta backlash.
It is like the macaron in that it's like just slowly grown and grown and grown and grown. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, for whatever reason, it's just back. It's back. And I'm here for it. I love it when you can apparently find it in the store.
I'll eat it.
So good. Yeah.
We get gnocchi in the Tavala meals pretty regularly. Their gnocchi is pretty good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I guess it's back. As in you can buy it in addition to it being.
Yeah, or they have a stockpile somewhere.
Findable in stores. Yeah. So if anybody knows why gnocchi is all of a sudden a thing, please email us, because I don't know why. I just know that it's like it's just bubbling up, like it is floating in the boiling water because it's done.
Time to eat.
And then finally, speaking of bubbling up, we just want to check in, because I actually initially put in the rundown today an item that, thank goodness, producer Rich realized we talked about last year, but which seems again to be sort of making a comeback, and I'm not sure why. And that thing is Sigma males. And I Did we take the quiz? I can't remember if we did.
Did we? I don't remember.
I feel like we did. There was like a quiz.
I think
Sigma,
we're right. I think we did.
We did, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I know I took a quiz with like all my friends a couple months ago. But for some reason, now I'm seeing it pop up again. And I'm seeing it pop up in news articles and like on TikToks. And there was an article just like a month ago that was basically like, Sigma male is a relatively new label that has been applied to a particular type of man in recent years. And if you want to share your Sigma male photos, here are some suitable captions. And then it has Sigma male quotes. I'm a man of few words and even fewer opinions. If I can't do big stuff, I can do incredibly small things.
Put more of your energy into listening than talking.
If you don't know what you want, you'll end up with things you don't need.
The Sigma male doesn't just want to be with you. He wants to own you? Wait, what?
Yikes, what? No, gross. Ew. Nowadays, though, apparently, the alpha male is the loser, and the sigma male is the winner.
What happened to the beta male?
Oh, yeah, no. Obviously. I mean.
Also, I love that the sigma male is described as not liking labels.
Exactly.
Like sigma male, for example.
Right. They wouldn't like that. Sigma male, in case you're wondering what the hell you're talking about because you weren't here last year or you missed that episode, Sigma male, according to dictionary.com, is a slang term used in masculinist subcultures for a popular, successful, but highly independent and self-reliant man. Another term for Sigma male is lone wolf.
Oh, it's just the old lone wolf again. Yeah.
Sigma male has seen most of its usage by the same members of what is known as the manosphere.
Now and I remember.
This is amazing. And those who use other Greek letters to form a social hierarchy known as, such as alpha male, beta male, and omega male. The term has also been used to mock all of these labels to categorize men.
As always happens.
Oh, my God. So, yes, the Sigma male is more like Clint Eastwood's characters that he always plays.
I'm a lone wolf, baby.
Yeah. It's huge.
Well, good for them.
And it just keeps happening. Just keeps happening.
Let's get to your things. Feedback at itsathing.be. Professor Art from the Philippines may be on to something. He writes, "Hi, Molly, Tommy, Richie. My thing spot involves a lifestyle that's been trending, and it's called the soft life. Apparently, the soft life is all about living a less stressful life, letting go of social expectations of what you should aspire to be or how much you should be earning, and instead focusing on peace of mind, relaxation, and wellness. It was originally coined by the Nigerian influencer community around 2021 as a way of telling women to live a stress-free life. From there, it made its way out to the wild and has now been appropriated for wider use. By 2022, it meant self-care and the removal of stressors for the younger generation, as well as embracing the spa lifestyle as seen on Pinterest. And now Glamour is talking about the soft girl revolution, where women prioritize relaxation and embrace femininity over the old girl boss hustle culture. Is this a development back to the paternalistic hegemony of the 1950s? No, because this is not imposed by the patriarchy. Sorry, watched Barbie. And instead is a lifestyle choice actively made by the women themselves. So there you go, Molly, Tommy, Richie, the soft life and by extension, soft girl culture. Love your show as always, Professor Art.
Yeah, actually, yes, there is a lot of this. And there are all these sort of women influencers who are like, here's how to be soft to attract a man and have nice things. And I don't want to hear, you know, I don't want to hear it. This is how it, yeah, this is definitely a thing. Didn't we? I feel like we talked about the soft life. Did we not?
Did we talk about the soft life? That one's not ringing a bell.
Oh, I thought we did.
But maybe we did. And I just, or maybe it wasn't, maybe I wasn't here.
I don't know, but love it. It's a really good one.
Rich says he cannot find evidence that we talked about the soft life. So
interesting. So maybe yeah. I just watched like 55 TikToks and I was like, I want to live the soft life.
Yeah, that happens sometimes where you a trend, you see it so much that you assume we've already talked about it or it's not that interesting. You know,
maybe. Yeah. Yeah. And it's often a woman with fantastic hair putting on lipstick and talking about how girls should act. And then being like, I don't care. I know you're going to come at me about this and I don't care. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Yeah. Larry from Columbus noticed a thing. Rich, Molly, Tom, this falls into the category of things I knew were things but never thought to call them things. Food halls. I'm ashamed to admit that it was a real estate article in the Wall Street Journal that made me realize my oversight. The Wall Street Journal, the most uncool source imaginable. We've got half a dozen or so food halls in Columbus, and now we're getting a mini food hall inside of grocery stores. Kroger has partnered with a California-based ghost kitchen called Kitchens United. It's actually a cool evolution of the business since ghost kitchens are more in the whatever happened to category now, and they're turning them into food halls.
So it's like a food court, but smaller.
But we call it a hall because it's fancier.
Yeah, because it's fancier. And it's also, if you're putting it in a Kroger, it's not really a... Well, it's not in a hall either, but I guess it's not a court. Food hall. Food hall.
Food hall. I'm into this. I don't know if it's a thing, but it makes sense that ghost kitchens would also evolve into food halls. And that given the rise of fast casual dining, thank you, that you might as well, if you're going to have fast casual, you might as well put it all together. And then, ooh, you know what you could do is once you have a bunch of people coming to eat, in a food hall, you could put like stores around it and then people could walk around.
Yeah.
Like a mall.
Here's the question.
Hall rhymes with mall. I think I invented a new thing. You could have a mall with like a food court in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a question. If your food hall has a Sparrow, is it not a food hall?
Then it's just a mall. Definitely just a mall.
Yeah, because okay, I'm thinking a million things. There's H Marts and 99 Ranch that have restaurants in them. They're big grocery stores. They have restaurants in them. Is that because when he talks about Kroger, is that Kroger just doing that, but then also riding the food hall trend? Then there's Woodland Hills Mall. Has a food court. It still has a traditional good old fashioned 1980s food court, but it also has a food hall that it calls Topanga Social, where it's like you can order from any restaurant in there from any kiosk, which is really annoying, I think, to the people when you walk up to their counter and then order from somewhere else, but you can do it. And it's all what these things are described as, which is local vendors, small shops, you know, providing food in like little kiosk areas and then big open seating where everybody can sit, like a food court. Yeah.
This is really interesting. I do want to take a little bit of issue with the description of the Wall Street Journal as the most uncool source available, because I actually think the Wall Street Journal is really good. And when they do those like A1 trend stories, they nail it.
Yeah. I don't say it too often because I just don't want to get in a fight with people about it. But if you just wall off the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal, I feel like it's one of the best news sources out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I would argue. Yes. Yeah. I would say one of the, I was about to say the best, but it sort of depends on what you're looking for.
Yeah,
but
exactly. I was very close to saying the best myself and I was like, yeah, but yeah.
I mean, I would safely say that it is the best of the big three. If it's New York Times, Washington Post, and Wall Street Journal, like the big three kind of national papers, like far and away the best, I would even say.
Let's throw USA Today in there. Big four.
Why not? Yeah, bless. Oh, bless. Yes.
Eric needs a check on a potential teenager thing. And who better to ask than me and Molly? Saw a thing in the news that teen driving accidents were down due in part to teens waiting longer to get their licenses. How long has this been a thing? So many of my friends' kids don't want licenses like when we were kids, in part because their parents drive them all over.
Also, they just don't. They're like more anxious. I mean, so sorry to, before I jump ahead into explaining why it's a thing, it's a freaking thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Like kids are waiting way longer to get their licenses. It's a really,
they're not like, when can I get my license? It's like, ooh, do I want my license? It kind of feels like, is that right?
And it might just be urban areas. I mean, we should probably be
sure
clear about, you know, like a big part of, I got my license at like 15 and a half, like the very first day I could get it because you just kind of had to, you know, we lived in smaller towns and there wasn't public transportation, but yeah, like no question that at least in urban areas, and it's a big topic of conversation among all the parents. Like, we're like, they're just not in a hurry. I don't know. I mean, my kid was in a hurry, but compared to his friend group, he was sort of an outlier.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100% true. And I'm happy to hear that it is causing the corresponding drop in accidents.
Yeah. And it sounds like you had a handle on the various factors that might contribute to that too.
Yeah. I think you're probably right. Like, they have potentially more transportation. I think parents are much more involved. I mean, like when we were growing up, the same parents who were like, you're not allowed inside the house, were probably also the parents who were like, you got to drive yourself to school. I am certain that in the past few years, it corresponds with the rise in remote work, because parents have more flexibility to pick kids up in some cases, socioeconomically speaking, where socioeconomically appropriate, those parents have more capacity to pick their kids up. So, like, a whole bunch of things coming up, and then just kind of more anxiety from kids. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It's really,
does environmental consciousness play a part? I wonder, where they're thinking like, and that thing just is making the problem worse. Like, it might not be the determinative factor, but it could feed in there, I guess.
Yeah. It's like, it's kind of, you know, like it's on the pile and every slice.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Adds up. Yeah. No question. Good spot. Good spot. EJ wants you Gen Xers, or in this case, us Gen Xers, to remember their roots. Okay, so Gen Xers aren't the only one that got raised that way. I'm a boomer raised by parents who were in the Greatest Generation demographic. Where do you think Gen Xers came that? Where do you Gen Xers think that parenting style came from? You got 104 days of summer off, and every morning from your parents, you got mom to kids. Get out of bed, eat breakfast, and go outside. Don't come back till lunch. Kid to mom. What time is lunch? Mom to kid. When I tell you, and don't be late. Mom to kid after lunch. A, I'm tired. You take a nap. B, I'm tired. Go outside and play till dinner. C, my stories are on. Go outside and play till dinner. Kid to mom. What time is dinner? Mom to kid. When I tell you, and don't be late, or you don't eat till breakfast. Mom to kid after dinner. Be home before the streetlights come on.
Yes. Also, Gen X, very used to being told by boomers how things are.
I know. Totally. I was like, I don't even know.
Yes.
I'm glad you said it.
Yes, boomers, you've always had it worse.
No, you had it much worse. You're right. Definitely. You're right.
Yeah.
You had it way uphill both ways in the snowstorm.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. It was.
Kidding aside, thank you, EJ. That was pretty
Tom
funny.
Gets
that was
it. Good stuff.
Jose, on a spooky season thing, this nightmare fuel is everywhere on lawns around here. I don't know why or why, but please make it stop. There is nothing scarier than a gigantic creepy baby. This thing is 4 feet long and wide. It's huge. Just no. And it's like the scary two-tooth zombie inflatable baby.
Yeah. Okay, I have not seen this, and now I'm never sleeping again.
And I'll take your word for it, Jose. I have not seen this one in my neighborhood yet. but if it's everywhere on lawns around you, it's only a matter of time, I think.
I'm going to be driving around looking for it.
Yep. Ugh.
And then that Charlie dude wrote in on a potential thing. Greetings, thingers. Have you all mentioned beards? I think beards and beard products are a thing, if not a super thing. Seems like more men I see lately have a beard than not.
Yeah. Have we mentioned beards? I feel like in the first run of It's a Thing, like the first three seasons.
Because they really come and go. And so it's hard to say, like, I guess they're... Wait, hold on.
Overall, you're right, Charlie dude, that beards have become a bigger thing and stuck around longer.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know that we're at late 1800s beard level, but I would guess we're at highest beard level since the 1890s.
Oh, yeah. Look at this. The Telegraph. Beards have gone mainstream, making those of us with a clean chin the real hipsters.
I mean, sure. I guess.
I guess they really are. I mean, it's funny because now that you say it, I'm trying to think of like who I see online who doesn't have a beard.
I started the beard in 2010 and I felt like I was unusual, right? Not weird, but like uncommon. I would say uncommon. And over time, more and more people were like, oh, look, Brian has a beard now too. Oh, look, that guy has a beard. Oh, look. So they have become more common. Till now, I don't feel uncommon having a beard, at least not in the US.
No, not at all. There's actually a piece I found in the Telegraph that cites a YouGov poll saying that beards are more common than not, that they are actually more popular.
Yeah, because
they're
easier.
The top choice. 54% say they currently have a beard or mustache, up from 42% in 2016 and 37% in 2017. Nailed it. Beards are everywhere.
For one, think it's great because shaving, not even shaving, but like trimming once a week versus shaving every morning. Forget it.
Yeah. Seems like it.
Yeah.
I would be stoked about that. I am stoked about it. I like a beard on a man. It's a good look. It's a good look, guys.
Keep it up, everybody. And why stop it, guys?
Exactly. If you can grow one, grow one. Grow one. Hell yeah.
Do it.
Speaking of keeping it up, keep up the support of our show. We are so grateful to all of you who support us at patreon.com/itsathing, especially those of you who create content with your contributions in the form of the shout outs. If you support us at the shout out level, you get shouted out in these custom crafted magical moments week after week. And this week's shout outs are based on a CNN article about phasing out the McFlurry spoon.
Oh, really? The McFlurry spoon.
How does he do it?
Yeah.
It used to have a spoon?
Yeah, but it's being phased out, Molly.
Must have been a big deal.
As I just found out when I read about this shout out today.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. McDonald's is getting rid of McFlurry spoons.
Who knew?
But what are you going to eat the McFlurry with?
I don't know.
The McFlurry spoon is hollow and it's differently shaped, but McDonald's is seeking more sustainable alternatives.
You're spoiling shout outs. All right, here we go. Audrey stole Adler's spot, who sparked confusion among Jake Woods for being hollow, is being phased out as Eric Duncan says he seeks more sustainable alternatives. The clear plastic Gabrielle Cohen doubled as an AJ Venturella, with Benjamin Forrest being inserted into the Lara Abel machine to mix in the toppings into Joe Hood.
Valor Trucks said that his U.S. locations are changing how they mix Louis St. Amour treats, with Brian Gianforcoro now using a reusable Mike Akins that's swapped out and cleaned after each Lee Price is made. James C. Smith will now be served with a smaller Morris Jones that uses less plastic, which are currently handed out with Kevin Sill.
If you feel slightly uncomfortable after paragraph one, you are not alone. And I apologize.
Rich was in the Discord in all caps typing, "You'll find out."
Exactly.
I don't think these show notes would have helped me understand.
You read ahead. It clearly said it was hollow and that they wanted more sustainable alternatives to Audrey stole Adler's spot.
That's true. I'm not sure I would have understood that, though, had I not already looked at the...
No, we're like, spoiler alert.
Oh my gosh. Those are great. Thank you, Rich. Thank you, shout out people. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for listening. You can become a member. As I mentioned, you get to join us every week live in our Discord and chat along with us and an ad-free RSS feed and more at patreon.com/itsathing.
You can also support the show by buying things through our affiliate links. Look for them in the show notes over at our shopping page, itsathing.me/shop. And you can email us your things to feedback@itsathing.me.
Bye-bye. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.